Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes, is presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products on 1010XL. Now your hosts, Lauren Brooks, Donna Murphy, and Blythe Brumleave.
Well, almost. Blythe Brumleave is in Orlando doing a little Disney magic this week. So it's Donna Murphy and myself, but we are going to have two special guests join us tonight. In the next segment, we will talk to Samantha Livingstone. She's going to join us by phone because she's up in Massachusetts, Donna's neck of the woods.
Wicked awesome.
An Olympic gold medalist in swimming, and also Chrissy Dosh, sports business analyst and founder of Guide My Brand, will join us. She is here in studio tonight, so that's going to be a lot of fun, and we will get into a little Boston Red Sox, New York Yankees, little Ezekiel Elliott. He, of course, has been in the headlines. Gary Player, like we just talked about with Brenton Hacker, had a little fun video clip at age 81. And, of course, we'll have a dose of Daily's Place and a Peterbrook chocolate heel to give away. D-Murph, what's up?
How are you?
I am fantastic.
Welcome
Thanks
back.
Thanks to you bringing me food.
Yes. Welcome back to Jacksonville.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, Stan is really good about bringing us food, but you know what? Some nights D-Murph is just...
We got to take care of
ourselves. Got to get it done, yeah. All right, Red Sox and Yankees happened this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Certainly a lot of attention. Several of the games were aired on national television. We saw Bob Costas do the first Friday night game.
By the way, when did that happen? I did not know Bob Costas was calling games on MLB Network. Anybody? Did you know?
I knew when I turned that specific game on and was like, that's Bob Costas.
So I had no clue.
I missed that as well.
Right. I'll be looking out for that because I would much rather listen to him than anything Sunday Night Baseball puts out.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the Red Sox and the Yankees rivalry, certainly for a long time it was back and forth and very heated. And then for a few years, at least the Yankees were down. The Red Sox have had bumps and bruises along the way, but have been better than the Yankees until now. The resurgence with, of course, bomber Aaron Judge.
Mm-hmm.
But Donna, with all that being said, you said something to me yesterday morning, and it literally made me drop my mouth open.
You did stop. Yeah.
I was shocked. You said you would never go to a Red Sox-Yankees game.
Never.
Tell me why.
I would never go because I want to go there and actually enjoy a game and enjoy the atmosphere. And much like I will never, ever go to a Red Sox game in Tropicana Field ever again because I can't enjoy it. The fans are awful. And when the Yankee fans invade Fenway Park, I can't deal with it. I just can't deal with it. I don't want them in my face. I don't want them by my side. And I don't want Rays fans in my ear with their cowbells. I want to go and enjoy a game and enjoy it. I don't want to hear cuss words left and right from the New Yorkers, from anybody or whatever. I just want to enjoy a game, and I can't enjoy that. When I'm at home and I watch this game, I turn it off when the Yankees are hitting. It's that bad. Like, I don't want to hit. I don't want to see what you guys do. I'm just turning it off.
That's fascinating.
It's so bad. But that's how I was raised. That's how I was raised. Still to this day, that's what my family does. We're turning it off. I don't want to see them.
But wouldn't you enjoy going to a Red Sox-Yankees game if the Red Sox were victorious, your team?
No, because still you're going to hear blah, 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 blah somewhere. I don't want it. I just want to relax and enjoy a game. Even if it's, say, even if they play Toronto or anything, Baltimore. In Fenway, I can enjoy that. There's not so many fans that invade. You know, it's just nice. Even if they lose, I don't care. It's just nice. That game, I will not go to a rivalry game. I will not. It will not be good for my stress level.
Which, that part I understand, the stress level part. But for me, the stress level would be there whether you're in person or whether you're at home watching because you're still going to be intense. I am the complete and total opposite of you. I absolutely love Florida, Georgia, for the reason that there are tons of Georgia fans that descend upon Jacksonville, and I want to be able to go back and forth with them on the history of the game, their current team, Mark Richt, now Kirby Smart, you name it. I love that. Florida State, I don't get to quite as much just because that game, I'll go more obviously in Gainesville than when it's in Tallahassee, because you don't want to be surrounded by the enemy, let's say.
Right.
But I love going to that game in Gainesville and baiting the Florida State fans, even though certainly the Seminoles have been much more victorious as of late. But I think that that's one of the most fun things to do is to kind of go back and forth with other fans. And you hate it.
Well, see, that's because it's one-sided on our end. For the longest time, it was just 1918, 19. That's all they would chant. And then once we finally got over that hump in 04, then they just keep chanting their 26 rings, 26 rings. Like, just shut up. Just shut up. I hate this rivalry, and I hate it because it's fantastic, but I can't listen to them. And I love our own Mike Dempsey so much, and he doesn't throw it back in my face because I don't throw it back in his face because what am I going to throw? Yes. Would you like to hear about our few World Series we have of late? Or do you want to hear about your entire history?
But, I mean, for instance, last year, the Red Sox were better than the Yankees by a wide margin. So wouldn't that have been fun?
No. No, because look what's happening this year with their stupid little Aaron Judge. No, you don't. You just don't. I don't like to throw any kind of shade because it will come back at me full force.
Understandable. Obviously, Aaron Judge plays for one of the richest franchises in all of sports, mm-hmm. in the Yankees, and they're the rival. But would you agree that Aaron Judge is good for Major League Baseball?
I think he's fantastic. I was happy that he did the Home Run Derby because I know that he was a little skeptical and didn't want to do it at first. And it turned out being like one of the highest rated home run derbies in years. And as it should be, you know, it was, I didn't watch much of it cause we were flying in, but, from what I heard, it was fun. It was exciting. And, but he is fantastic for this rivalry because it has been kind of put to side and we've learned to dislike the Rays and the Orioles more in the past few years. But for this rivalry, it's perfection.
I love that you've talked really bad about my newfound baseball team.
Well,
twice
you are wearing
already.
The hat.
I am wearing
so
the hat.
So it's in my face.
I have to be able to, I have to wear it while Frank's not here. That's kind
yes,
of the rule.
That's fine.
But would you say that the Rays have climbed up to be a rival of the Red Sox
yes,
at this point?
Yes, definitely. Them, or the Blue Jays are probably kind of just the
forgotten about
yeah.
Canadian team.
Yeah, they're, well, not that they're a Canadian team, but yeah, they're the forgotten about team in the AL East. That's what they are.
All right, so the Home Run Derby happened. Did you read about the flack that Jessica Mendoza got on
I
the
did.
Broadcast?
Blythe and I discussed this last week, and I have to say, I understand when it comes to us women, when we talk on air, and I know that we've had numerous meetings about what we should do, what we should fix, tweak, talk about.
Sure.
And one of the things that has always stuck with me is be careful what you know, how much you laugh and when you guys laugh together. Because it kind of comes across, you know, girly,
silly,
you know, yes. So we don't want that. And that to me is what I was hearing backlash for her, for Mendoza. She could be high pitched. She can be screechy. She comes across as girly. And I don't know. I don't do TV. So I don't know if they get talked to about the same way we get talked to with how you should talk from your diaphragm and whatnot and sound a little bit more professional because nobody's looking at us, but we just need to sound professional, obviously, as we come in our pajamas every night. So it doesn't matter what we look like, but as long as the voice sounds clear and crisp, then everything is okay. And for me, with her, that's where I can understand where people are giving her a little bit flack. But honestly, it's the whole crew for me is just kaput. I just don't like it.
Yeah. I understood why people were upset. Not upset. That's too strong of a word. But why people were kind of taking mm-hmm. jabs because she was constantly saying just the same word over and over again. Wow. 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 And it almost had the sound of someone who didn't realize that her voice was actually going out over the air, that it was she was just a fan
right.
hanging out. And that's where I do think that next year, if she's assigned to that game again, they should tell her things like, okay, you know, you can't be Berman with the back. So you have to come up with some more words to use instead of just wow.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that's a little bit of instructional teaching as far as what to say when a huge hit happens. And
or
right,
use her
those
in a different
bums.
Aspect.
Sure.
You know, she doesn't have to be at the desk with all of them. Use her in the outfield. I don't know. You know, use her in the stands. Use her somewhere. Because I do think that she is wonderful. And for her to still be around and with as much flack as she has gotten, especially from fans, like bravo to her because she could have been like, you know what? I don't need to deal with this. I don't need all this crap. I'm just going to go off and peace out for a while.
Yeah, she said could have said I'm going to switch to softball because that's what I played. And,
exactly.
And I'm not getting kind of the warm reception that I wanted with
right.
baseball.
So maybe she's just not being utilized the best way.
Well, I think she does a great job during games. I just think it for the Home Run Derby, and I can understand that because I don't know that I would have known what to say mm-hmm. when they literally were hitting it farther than we've really ever seen before right. in one of those derbies. But regardless, I thought it was one of the most exciting things we'll see in baseball, and I hope the popularity continues to grow because it was so much fun to watch. The problem, though, is now everyone's seeing that Aaron Judge has gone mm-hmm. he went 1-for-18 over
I'm so sad.
Fenway against the Red Sox over the weekend, and then last night was 0-for-3 in the loss from the Yankees to the Twins. So it's going to make other players, we joke kind of almost, or not really take it seriously, this slump after the Home Run Derby. But he is certainly right now a case study for it. And
that's funny because a lot of people have been trying to make that case. But then again, you know, I make it, and this is where the rivalry comes out, I make the case that he hits in the Little League Park for that Yankee Stadium where you're not going to hit as many home runs in Fenway Park. You're just not going to. And so he played the first four games after the All-Star game at Fenway. So don't look at those four games as any kind of a stretch for the All-Star, you know, break conundrum. You got to look
rivalries.
At the next.
Yeah. Love it. And we will talk more Red Sox-Yankees a little bit later. Coming up in the show, we are going to talk to Olympic gold medalist Samantha Livingstone and Christy Dosh, sports business analyst. That's all coming up next. Stay tuned to Helmets and Heels built by Dreamfinders Homes on 1010XL.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. Donna Murphy, Lauren Brooks alongside you, and we have two special guests joining us now. One is here in studio, Christy Dosh, sports business analyst, author and publicist, and founder of Guide My Brand. Hey, Christy.
Well, you know, I get bored if I have nothing to do.
Exactly. So you may as well do everything. And speaking of a woman who does everything, joining us now is Olympic gold medalist Samantha Livingstone here on the hotline because you are up in Massachusetts. Samantha, how are you doing tonight?
I am great. It's so fun to be on with you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us. And I mentioned you do everything because not only are you a public speaker and an empowerment coach, but you also have four girls as well, so that I'm sure they keep you very busy.
Yes, they are with Daddy right now. Yes, they do keep me busy, but it's such a joy. It's a blessing. It's hard and messy and awesome.
I love it. And I'm sure I'm sure Dad's going to do a great job, so that way unfortunately, we don't get to hear any of their little voices come through the phone while we talk to you.
Right.
All right. I am someone who has always considered myself a perfectionist, Samantha. So when I first looked at your website, I absolutely loved the idea of how to let go of perfection. Can you kind of run me through how you came up with that and really how you deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So I never called it that. I actually looked at the word perfection as sort of like something to, you know, an attribute where it was like a good thing. You know, it was like what was driving me to the gold medal and driving me in the classroom and driving me for success. And so it wasn't until I started, it was actually hearing the words of Brene Brown that I started to realize like, well, hold on a minute. Wait a minute. This is like, there's something else here. And it's, you know, it was really being bedside when one of my girls, so I have four, like you mentioned, and one of them, I have twins, and she was hospitalized after open heart surgery. And there was a moment post-op where it sort of cracked me wide open when she went into heart failure. And there was nothing that I could do to change what was happening around me. And one of the biggest lies of perfection is that you just try harder. You know, you just try harder. You fall short, you just try harder. And so it wasn't in that moment that I realized like this was perfection. And, you know, it took me 3 years, probably 2 years before I heard the words of Brene Brown. And I realized, oh my gosh, like this is what's been going on in my life. And so it's really, I mean, to talk about perfection, I could talk to you for so long because I'm so passionate about it. And now understanding the difference between healthy striving and perfection. But I think that it's something that it's really almost impossible to measure because people who struggle with it aren't necessarily calling it that, or they don't want to admit that they struggle with it. Because, you know, you don't want to admit that you have to, you know, that you have this thing going on. You want everything to be perfect on the outside. So, yes, you're not alone. We are not alone. And I call myself a recovering perfectionist.
Samantha, have you noticed that throughout the years that you've been doing this speaking, that has there been any stories out there that others have come to you that has moved you and helped you better yourself?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Oh, so much. I think that that's where I sit back and I'm like, you know, people will write in to me or they'll, you know, send me an email or a message on Facebook. And it's like, I don't know, you know, I'm doing my work by sharing this message because I felt so alone in it. You know, the shame is so strong and shame needs silence to survive. And so it's really a big deal to share it because it's, you know, go to this really vulnerable place. And so the strength that I've gained in it, you know, my confidence in continuing to share and the reason that I do continue to share is because of the messages that come pouring in. Because you get a message from someone that says, oh my gosh, me too. And it just sort of stops you. It brings me to tears and I get chills because, you know, I know that I've reached them and they feel less alone in it. And I know that I can help walk them to a healthier place of freedom. And so for that, like, you know, to have that hope that like this inner critic doesn't have to always rule my life, you know? So their messages, yeah, I mean, there are many that come in, and those messages motivate me and continue to give me the courage to continue to share the parts of my story that I wasn't, you know, I haven't shared for the last, you know, I was in Sydney when I was on top of the podium, and so it's been almost 17 years, and so for the last, I would say 16 years, I haven't been sharing the whole story, you know, so...
Hi, Samantha. It is your favorite publicist here.
You get to party in the studio.
It's so fun when I get to like interview my own client. That doesn't happen very often. You know, what really struck me about your story when I was first introduced to you was when you talked about standing up on that podium and getting the gold medal and still feeling like it wasn't enough, because I've definitely had times when I felt like that. I mean, I went to law school and graduated in practice. I've published books. You know, I was ESPN's sports business reporter for a while. And I'm like always looking for like more things to add. And being a publicist is perfect because now I can just help other people do it instead of overbooking myself. But I grew up playing sports. And I'm wondering, do you think that there's a correlation there? Like, do you think that being athletes as kids, that breeds perfectionism in us, or that somehow that we're drawn to athletics because of it? I mean, do you think there's a correlation there?
I think that there's, so I think the second part of what you're saying, the latter part, I think that there, so when I, you know, through the research that I've done, I'm so interested, I'm an eternal student. And so it's not, you know, there was research, you know, early on that was like, this is a genetic trait. And now we know that it's a combination of genetics and environment. And so I think that as perfectionists, you know, when one of the like hallmarks is that if you just get it right, you know, if you just try hard, if you just get it right on the outside, then you'll have this sense of fulfillment and joy. And so as athletes, you know, it's possible you're in this arena and you have these moments of joy, you work for these things and it's like, okay, if I just move my hand this way in the water, or I played soccer as well, if I just practice this skill, then I'll be able to do this. You know, if I can just, and you insert whatever it is. And so in the athletic arena, you know, I think what's so, you know, for me, my stage and using my gold medal as a vehicle to share this message is, if I just win a gold medal, you think that would be enough. And in fact, it brought me momentary joy. But standing up there, I felt like a fraud. I felt like I was going to be found out. I felt like I wasn't, you know, the story I told myself was I wasn't athletic enough. And, you know, we'd just broken an Olympic record, gone the fastest time, and I had the fastest split. And so it was, you know, there's nothing more. The data in front of me showed like that, what the story that I was telling myself, like there was a disconnect there. And so I think as athletes, it just reinforces, because perfectionism is also addictive. And so you get into this arena and you can keep chasing and you can, you know, you can, that addiction is fed. And so I think that as athletes are drawn to that, but it's personality, you know, genetics, your personality, your temperament, along with environment too. Because not all athletes that reach a high level, you don't have to be a perfectionist to achieve in sport, which is the message they really want to empower young athletes with.
Samantha Livingstone, Olympic gold medalist, joining us. You can learn more, SamanthaLivingstone.com. Samantha, how do you think your life would have been different if you had won the silver versus the gold?
Yes. So that's a really interesting question. I think that Oh, in so many ways, because the gold medal, you know, is looked at. If you can look at headlines, right? When someone loses the gold medal, they don't win silver. And I have a lot of friends who are silver medalists, and that is their platform. Like, I won my silver medal, you know? So I might be doing the same work. I'd like to think that I would be doing the same work. In helping to teach that it's not this, like, there's no podium moment that will bring you eternal happiness. Like, that has to come from within. So I think that, to answer your question, I'm not sure. I know that this gold medal title captures an audience that I can then help reach, if that makes sense. So it's like a vehicle for me, to speak to those who need to hear my message.
Samantha, what are you teaching? What is the most important thing for you to your four girls?
To be courageous. My biggest message across all platforms, no matter if I'm talking to my, you know, four-year-old twins, my seven-year-old, or, you know, all the way through up until I have teenage and entrepreneurs, fellow entrepreneurs who are in their 50s, it's like cultivating this culture of courage and compassion. And I think that as perfectionists, you want to work on that and learn to let that go. Like, the number one piece is cultivating self-compassion, which makes a perfectionist skin crawl. You know, it's like really, really uncomfortable to give ourselves grace and love. And so that, I think, is the biggest message, to be brave and to know that this, it doesn't define you. And that you, if you build that resiliency, there's nothing that you can't do while finding balance and joy. Like, that exists. Like, you can have both. You can have your big dreams, and you can do it in a healthy way where you find balance and enjoy the journey.
Samantha, I'm curious, are you looking to prevent your girls from becoming perfectionists? Like, if you started to see them showing those tendencies, is that something you would want to stop and nip in the bud, or how do you redirect that energy if you see that starting to come out in your girls?
That's such a great question. I actually have, so, you know, family members, like cousins that are at that age, 10, like 9, 10, 11, and some parents who've reached out to me because they start to see those signs. And I think that you can't, I think of perfection as sort of this operating system, or you could say like a lens in the way that you view the world. The way, you know, you have information coming in, so you have messages, like it might be something as simple as a quote that they see on, you know, on the walls of, you know, wherever. It might be a message that a coach is sharing with them in person after a soccer game, or something their parent says. And it gets filtered through this perfectionist lens or this operating system, and they internalize it. So I think, I don't know, this is a really, really good question. And I, there's a psychologist who I'm working with as well to try to like, to really get to answer that, because I don't know the answer to that. There's no perfect answer to that question, other than when you see that right away, teaching those resiliency skills, I mean, teaching shame resiliency, because, you know, even if you don't struggle with perfection, all of us have been shamed in some form or fashion in our life, in our lifetime. And so being able to teach those skills and help them process that, I think, is a bigger gift than trying to change kind of how they're hardwired. I don't even know if it's possible to change how you're hardwired. I know that as I, you know, I speak as a recovering perfectionist, because it's a daily choice, because my default is to look at things through that lens, and it gets stronger. You know, the pathways in your brain, you can create new ones, and those highways, as I continue to choose this path, it becomes more automatic over time. So that's a really good question. And I think that, you know, as I dig further in and maybe, you know, have some sort of research study, we can look into that. But I think that's my approach now, is helping them to develop the skill set that can empower them for the rest of their life.
Samantha, speaking of being courageous, I have kind of a fun question for you. Would you pose for the ESPN, the body issue?
Totally.
I love it.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a girl.
Yes, that's totally it. And that's someone, I battled an eating disorder, you know, and so that's been that was the first layer of perfection that I healed, was with food, my relationship with food. And then it was all these, because it permeates every area of your life, including relationships, too.
Certainly. And I think that's the great part about that issue is it does expose kind of that there is a fun aspect of athletes' completely naked bodies, and doesn't have to be, you know, something where the person has a perfect body, but it always is a beautiful athletic body. So good. I'm glad that was your answer. All right, Samantha, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I have loved every bit of this. And one final quick question. What do you tell yourself when you're having a bad day?
Oh, what do I tell myself when I have a bad day? You know what's really powerful for me? This is so learning to step back as a compassionate observer is what I tell myself. That's literally what I say to myself, because when you, and that's part of being compassionate, is like if you imagine yourself just sort of removing yourself from the situation and sitting high up and kind of watching the dialogue unfold in front of you, that back and forth inner critic and then the you underneath when they get at it with each other. Being able to pull myself away from that and just be a witness to it and just say, oh, you know, like, of course, like just giving myself grace. So that's what I go to, is compassionate observer. And then I run through a checklist. Like, have I been outside today? Have I exercised today? And how am I on water? You know, and all those things that I know help me to feel good. And it's not that easy all the time. Like, it's not like I have a bad day. I mean, there are some days like I get stuck in my own head, and then you reach out to people. If the things that you know work aren't working for you, you reach out to your small little list of people and say, I need help.
Awesome. I like the checklist. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, there's no perfect way to be a perfect, like you can't be a perfect recovering perfectionist. I've tried that too.
Awesome. Right? Well, Samantha, thank you so much for joining us. I know you want to get back to your family up there, and certainly, like I said, head to SamanthaLivingstone.com if you'd like more information.
So fun. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Wow. It's got to be tough to have to manage all that. And when things don't go your way, you do have to kind of make sure that you don't become that kind of old self and say, like, well, I give up almost because I can't get it perfect. So,
and especially with the four girls obviously looking up to her and, you know, admiring her and wanting to be her, it's hard. You got to make sure you don't look at these tendencies, you know, hide them when you can. And yeah.
Well, Christy, thanks for recommending her to join us. She's fantastic.
It was fun. Thanks for having her.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We are going to get into a little bit more about Christy. If you don't know more about Christy, you're going to find out. That's coming up next. You're listening to Helmets and Heels Built by Dream Finders Homes on 1010XL.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. With Donna Murphy, Lauren Brooks, Christy Dosh joining us tonight for a little special edition of Helmets and Heels. Well, Blythe is in Orlando doing the Disney thing. I personally am not envious, but I think Hacker is.
Yes, of course.
But I'm sure she's having a good old time. All right, Christy, I'm going to try not to breathe during your career roles here. Professional writer, speaker, sports business analyst, attorney, I had to breathe, and author who founded Guide My Brain in 2015. That is a boutique publicity firm representing entrepreneurs and authors, which we just heard from one of those entrepreneurs in Samantha Livingstone. So let's go kind of back to the beginning. You went to Florida for law school, and then what happened?
I thought I was going to be an attorney for the rest of my life. I mean, that had been my whole life plan. I'm a planner. And I knew from a really young age I wanted to be an attorney, went to law school, knocked it out, got a job at a great firm up in Atlanta where I'm originally from. I practiced law for almost 5 years and actually really enjoyed it. I get messages from attorneys all the time. They're like, how did you get out? I hate to say it, but I wasn't necessarily looking to get out. I love to write and I love sports. And so I started writing about legal issues in sports totally as a creative outlet, like something I did in my free time. Not that I had that much of it as a practicing attorney, but I had like a little bit. And I would blog about these legal issues in sports on my own blog, like free WordPress site. No one knew existed. I always joke, not even my parents read it. I mean, we're not talking I was writing for like anybody you've ever heard of, but started using social media and meeting people and getting asked to do like guest blogs on bigger and better blogs, still blogs you've never heard of, but like bigger and better than being on my own. And, over the course of a couple of years, ended up getting invited to contribute to Forbes, which I'm back at Forbes now. I'm on my second stint at Forbes, which was broken up in the middle by going to ESPN. Like, I never even thought of having like ESPN as my dream job. I know that's a dream job for a lot of people, but I wanted to be a lawyer my whole life. Like, it never occurred to me that I wanted to be a journalist or a sports broadcaster, but had the opportunity to leave the practice of law after about 4.5 years and go be ESPN sports business reporter. And I mean, what an amazing experience, like, to be able to have said that I did that. And had a great opportunity there, really enjoyed it for a couple of years, and then came out and thought, okay, what do I do now? It's tough to get on somewhere as a sports business reporter full time. That's not something that most outlets employ. And so there weren't a lot of other options when I left ESPN.
And did you know you didn't want to go back to be an attorney?
I did know that.
Okay.
Even though I enjoyed it when I was doing it, I think it would be hard to go back to have to go into an office every day. I've been working from home for a few years at that point, to go back into an office every day and have billable hour requirements like that. It was fine when I was doing it the first time around because I didn't know any better. But like after I got out of it, the idea of going back to it, I just couldn't. And so I was thinking, what can I do from home? Because I really like working from home. I really like to write. And I came across a job opening that was for a PR and content marketing firm. And they were looking for a work-at-home writer, and a lot of their clients were law firms. So they wanted somebody who could come in and ghostwrite blogs and bylined articles for attorneys. And I thought, like,
perfect.
There's the job for me. Like, I love to write. I am an attorney. I can do this. So I did. I did that for a couple of years working in someone else's firm. And then almost exactly 2 years ago, left that firm to start my own. And if you told me...
Is that scary?
Yeah, incredibly. It's still scary every day. And my business has lasted for 2 years and I, you know, replaced my income and everything, but it's still scary on an almost daily basis. Yeah.
Well, I know when we were at SEC Media Days last week, you had some technical issues and you were kind of starting to lose your mind a little bit.
It's the worst because it's just me. I have a junior publicist who works with me part-time. I have a virtual assistant that I buy like a certain number of hours from a month. But at the end of the day, like the buck stops with me. If a client needs something, if there is an emergency or something's wrong or, you know, big news happens and we need to jump on it, like, it's just me. There's no one else to pass it off to. You know, you go on vacation, you still have to check your email. And I vacationed with some of my other friends who are still attorneys. Actually, I just in April went up to Savannah with two of my friends who are attorneys. They both work in government jobs. One is a district attorney and one is a city prosecuting attorney. So when they go on vacation, like, they don't check their email. They don't check their voicemail. Like, when they're on vacation, they're on vacation. They don't have a lot of flexibility and they only have a certain number of vacation days a month. So we were debating what's better, that they can go on vacation and don't have to look at anything, but they only get, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of vacation a year, or me, who has a totally flexible schedule, can travel whenever I want because I can just work on the road. And I do travel a ton and do that. You know, I get to work from home. I make my own hours. I went and got my hair done for a few hours this morning because, you know, I mean, who can tell me that I can't, right? So, which is better, but I go on vacation and I have to check my emails. You know, I have to check in. Sometimes I can delegate things while I'm gone and I'm not having to do a lot of work while I'm gone, but there is no turning it all the way off. I still like my way better.
I don't blame you at all. Now, so you obviously went to law school. That's what you wanted to do. But you said that you were always a sports fan. So where did that come from?
Grew up just watching and playing sports. I played softball pretty much from 5 to my mid-20s. And then in between, tried out basketball 1 year. I was the only female in the entire league. So it was sort of co-ed in that it was male and female, except I was the only female. And that was the only year I played. I was done with basketball after that. I did cheerleading and dance team and tennis. And, you know, I think I tried everything but soccer. My mom would not let me play soccer. I had a friend who broke her shin playing soccer. And my mom was like, no, you're not playing soccer and I'm not going to watch soccer. So that was like the only sport I think I never really tried. And I actually went to law school thinking it would be awesome if I could work in sports as an attorney. I really wanted to be the first female general manager in Major League Baseball. That was my goal most of my life. And in fact, there still hasn't been one. So, I mean, the door is not closed, people. But I interviewed actually with a team my final year of law school, and I found out they were going to pay me less as an attorney than I made as a legal secretary slash paralegal before law school, like before I took out law school loans. And I just couldn't financially make it work. And I met this young attorney in the office at that team, and he said, if you love baseball, you won't take this job. He said, it'll ruin it for you. You know, you got to be in the office like, you know, 9 to 5 every day. Plus you have to go to every single home game. And that sounds like fun, like get to go to all the games, but you're running around finding people who've been hit by like a bat or a ball and getting them to sign a waiver that they're not going to sue the team.
That sounds terrible.
I don't know how much fun that is on a daily basis. And now that I've been on the media side, you know, it took me years later to finally be on the media side, and I get it now, you know. For those of you who have listened to the station for a while, I'm married to Chad Scott here at the station, and people think all we do is sit around and watch sports because we've both worked in sports media, and that must be like all we do, right?
No.
We very rarely watch sports. In college football season, we watch college football all day every Saturday, but that's pretty much it because it's not an escape for us. It's part of our job, and it does change the way you look at it as a fan. So I'm really glad that I didn't end up working in baseball.
Did you ever think about becoming an agent?
I did. I shadowed an agent, and after a few hours, I knew that I did not want to be an agent. So I always encourage young people, if you think you know what you want to do, find someone who does it, ask them if you can shadow them, because that has talked me out of a lot of jobs.
What was kind of the thing wrong,
smarmy,
so to speak, about it?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me, and the agent told me that he thought there was a reason there were so few women who were agents in the big four professional sports. Mm-hmm. And he said it's because the men don't always feel comfortable sharing certain things with female agents. So this agent that I met while I'm with him gets a phone call from one of his athletes who is in a hotel room with his mistress, and he knows that his wife is headed there, and he wants the agent to go head her off in the lobby and stall so that he can get rid of his mistress. And the agent said, like, do you think he would have called you? Like, I don't know that he'd call a female agent and ask her to do that. And I thought, and I don't want anyone calling asking me to do that. So no, thank you.
Well, plus, I mean, you got the wives or girlfriends of the players trust the female agent.
Right.
Like, how much trust would they have in you? Like,
exactly.
What are you're always with my guy, you know? So Tough.
It just didn't appeal to me at all. You know, there's the exciting parts that happen every once in a while when you're negotiating a contract, but that's not the everyday life of a sports agent. And that's something I've learned the older I've gotten with really any job. And anytime I talk to somebody young, I always tell them, figure out what the actual day-to-day job is, because whatever you think it is, it's probably not. That probably only happens every once in a while. You know, I learned that doing an internship at the WTA tour. I thought that was going to be fantastic. I was going to work in tennis and I was going to get to like negotiate their TV contracts, and you know, there's going to be all this exciting stuff. I sent cease and desist letters every day for websites that were using our logo on their website. The most, you know, boring, monotonous work you've ever done in your life. And so that talked me out of really wanting to work in sports as an attorney. I'm sure there are sports attorneys that have exciting careers, but the ones that I witnessed were not. So when I went to work in a law firm, I didn't do anything related to sports. You know, people always think I ended up in sports media because I was practicing sports law. I wasn't. I was doing commercial real estate finance. It had nothing to do with sports. I was just blogging about sports on the side because I'm a big sports fan. And I blogged mostly about baseball because I grew up playing softball. So I think I understand the game the best in terms of how it's played. And I grew up watching the Braves with my dad every night. You know, that was our thing, was sitting in the recliner and watching the Braves at night. And so I had always wanted to be around baseball, and writing that blog let me have that creative outlet and be connected to baseball. Now, actually, I haven't written about baseball in years, because that goes back to what I was saying about you lose a little bit of your fandom. So like, I can still go to a baseball game as a fan because I don't report on baseball anymore.
Christy Dosh joining us. Christy, of all the hats that you wear, which one would you say is the most difficult? Because I'm going to guess it's the public speaking, but you may disagree.
No, not public speaking at all. That's easy. I love public speaking. I wasn't someone who was ever afraid of it. Do I get nervous? Absolutely. But to me, it's like riding a roller coaster. Like, it's a like nervous excitement. It's an adrenaline rush. I love it. I've done so much public speaking over the last 10 years that I can walk in pretty cold. I don't like really stress over it, or not that I don't prepare, but I do the same few speeches, quite honestly, over and over. So I know them in my sleep. That isn't hard at all. For me, it's being a publicist and representing people, because you know they're spending that money with me and they want a return on that investment. They want their business to grow. They want to establish themselves as experts in their field. And for many of them, they have very, very personal, emotional stories. Like you heard with Samantha earlier, they have these details of their private life that they're willing to share with the right audience, and you've been entrusted with it, and you have to make sure you're putting them in front of the right people, and that you're not putting them in bad situations, that you're not hooking them up with a writer who's going to misrepresent their story or exploit them somehow. So to me, there's a lot of pressure in being a publicist to deliver for my clients and to really protect them and to look out for them.
And I would never have thought of it that way, but certainly you're doing a great job. I know we had Rachel Barbeau on last week, and you also have her as a client, and she is changing the narrative. All right, more with Christy coming up. We're going to get into a little baseball, since that is Christy's love. We're going to talk a little Red Sox, Yankees, and how do you consume sports. That's all coming up next. You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes on 1010XL.
Pitch to Judge. Swing and a high fly ball center field. Bradley going back. At the track near the bullpen, leaps, he caught it! Leaping over the railing, he stole a home run from Aaron Judge. Jackie Bradley Jr., what a play. Oh my goodness.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Did he steal a home run?
Oh, he stole it.
Or did he just make a spectacular play all on his own?
You know, I watched that video several times. I couldn't quite tell if it would have hit the wall. I think he stole it. I'm going with stolen.
I don't think it would have hit the wall. I think it was in the bullpen.
He would have been found guilty in the court of the law by a judge.
But welcome back, yes, to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes, Lauren Brooks. I am Donna Murphy. We are without Blythe as she is visiting the lovely Disney.
Yeah, for work, which is pretty exciting.
Right. Yep. But we do have Christy Dosh, so good for us.
Heck yeah. Thanks for letting me hang out, ladies.
Of course. We do want to get in. We talked earlier a few segments ago about, which is why Tyler played the Jackie Bradley Jr. catch, not the Aaron Judge missed home run. But I mentioned I could never go, and I'm a huge Sox fan. I've grown up as a Sox fan, and I could never go to a Sox-Yanks game because I wouldn't be comfortable. I wouldn't be happy. I would be aggravated and snarling the whole time.
Snarling.
I would. But I've been told that you've been
yes.
to those games.
One of the best baseball games I've ever been to, and I've been to a lot, and I've been in a lot of different cities, was a Red Sox-Yankees game at Fenway last weekend of the regular season, 2004. So one of them was going to clinch the division. One of them was going to clinch the wild card. Mm-hmm. And it really came down to what happened, I think, in an Indians game. And so it was an interesting atmosphere. But, you know, I've been to World Series games. I grew up in Atlanta, a Braves fan. Saw them go, you know, from worst to first. Went to World Series games in Atlanta long before I ever went to Fenway the first time. My dad grew up partially a Red Sox fan because my dad grew up in Atlanta. The Braves didn't come to Atlanta till he was 11 or 12, but the Red Sox played on the radio. And my dad is a lefty, so he loved Yaz. Mm-hmm. And so we were sort of raised to be Red Sox and Braves fans, which was no problem at all until interleague play.
Right.
You could be both, and it was no big deal. So I took my dad to Fenway for the first time in 2001, just because he'd never seen it, and we both really wanted to go and have that experience. Had the time of our lives. It's unlike anywhere else I've ever been, and I've been to about half of the major league parks now. So we go back in 2004, go for Yankees Red Sox, which we just felt like as baseball fans and as Red Sox fans, you had to experience at least once. I would do it over again. If you gave me tickets for every Red Sox Yankees game at Fenway, I would go to every single one of them because it's like the World Series every single game. I love it. The atmosphere is unlike anything in baseball. And then, of course, being there the last weekend with so much on the line was
sure.
an even bigger deal. But I love it. You know, I hate Yankees fans, too. Look, they come into Atlanta. They live in Atlanta mm-hmm. and come to the Braves games when the Yankees are in town. And, you know, I hate them, too. I'm right there with you. But I love seeing the Red Sox and the Yankees together live.
So, well, then let's go to your rivalries. Do you like going to Florida games with rivalries? You know,
absolutely. Yeah. The only time I don't like going to a rivalry game is when I'm in the press box. It's hard for me not to cheer. And you're not supposed to cheer in the press box. I've never actually done it. I've caught myself like mid-clap. I don't know how many times. You know, Chad and I travel a lot to games in the fall. I do a lot of speaking in athletic departments. We get invited to go to different games. And we go all over the country. And I try not to go when Florida's playing somewhere else. We were at Texas A&M for their first SEC home game, and it was Florida. And I didn't want to be there. I wanted to be there for Texas A&M's first SEC game. That was a really cool atmosphere. Those fans were so excited about coming into the SEC. But I did not want to be there when they were playing Florida because I had made friends at Texas A&M at that point. Like, I wanted to be able to root for them, and I sure as heck wasn't going to root for them against Florida. Mm-hmm. And then when Florida won, none of them wanted to hang out with us afterwards. So I do try to stay away as a media member when my team is playing.
That game always goes down for me as the one where my friend who was pregnant with twins, her husband really wanted to go to that game, and he missed the birth of his twins.
Oh, no!
And missed the game, unfortunately. took the flight out as soon as he could, as soon as he found out she was going to the hospital. But he ended up missing both. Yeah, exactly.
Epic
so
fail.
That first game with Texas A&M in the SEC, I'll remember where I was watching it, and certainly Florida defeating Johnny Manziel was such a big deal at the time.
Right. Oh, and you know, I didn't even really know who Johnny Manziel was at that point. It's so funny, like, looking back on it now, but I can remember us standing on the sidelines and being like, who is this kid? So, from then on, I have not seen Florida on the road as a media member. I've seen them as a fan, but we end up at Texas A&M every year. That Chad and I, that's like our game. I went to Florida for law school. He went to Auburn, but Texas A&M has become like our adopted team, and we've been 7 years in a row now. And this year will be the second time we've gone when Auburn's there. And Auburn won last time, and our friends didn't want to hang out with us afterwards. So we'll see how it goes this year.
Am I alone in this? Are you okay with your rival games?
I absolutely love them. Yeah.
Man.
I love them.
Tyler? I've never met anyone who doesn't.
I don't.
You're like a unicorn.
I would understand not wanting to go to Red Sox Yankees in New York.
Yes.
That part I understand. Agreed. The hostile environment is not always fun. The one time I went, I've been twice to Florida State games where Florida played at Florida State in Tallahassee. And that was miserable. But yeah, because you're surrounded by the enemy, basically.
Well, Tyler's a Cubs fan. Do you want to go see, you know, Cubs-Cardinals?
Yeah, if you're telling me I can go to Cubs-Padres or Cubs-Athletics or Cubs-Cardinals, I'm going to Cubs-Cardinals every time.
Gosh.
I don't understand that take.
Maybe because Yankee fans suck.
They do.
That's why.
Yeah.
They're just awful.
They're annoying.
They are so bad.
You never like dealing with the opposing fans. So you got to deal with that, but then you like to rub it in your face when you win, of course.
Right, and you don't want to go out. Like, back in 2001... was it 2001? I think so. When I was on tour with Sesame Street and we had a break in New Jersey because that's where the Giants stadium is. They call it New York. It's not, it's in New Jersey.
The Meadowlands.
And so I went to see, I went to the Jets Patriots game, and this was the year, it wasn't the year of Tom Brady. I think it was the year right before that. So it might have been 2000. But anyway, but I was garbed out. I didn't care I went to the Jets and I was treated just fine. Just fine. I was garbed in my Patriots. I had stuff on my face. Everything went great there. But yet I go, and it's still Fenway Park. I go there, or Tropicana. I go there and I just get reamed left and right. I'm like, I don't get it. I just can't.
You've been to a lot of Major League Baseball stadiums and obviously a lot of college football stadiums. What's your favorite of each?
Fenway's definitely my favorite baseball stadium. It's unlike anywhere else. If you're a baseball fan, I just feel like it's like the cathedral of baseball. And I went to the old Yankee Stadium before it closed. I've been to Wrigley, but Fenway's just different. You really feel like you're stepping back in time when you walk in.
Because it's so old.
Wrigley's so old.
Ways. Yeah, but it is, and I agree. I agree because I'm biased, but it looks old too. Like, everything, the seats are old. You are You are right next to whoever you're sitting next to.
I think that's part of what I love about it, though. You know, we had the opportunity to go to the 100-year anniversary game in 2012, and that was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had, was going for that. So Fenway's definitely my favorite baseball stadium. You know, for football, that's tough. My favorite game day experience, and Chad and I always say you have to take your alma mater out of it. So taking Florida out of the picture, because you're never going to feel that way about anywhere else. Mm-hmm. My favorite place to see a game is Texas A&M. That's why we go every year. Their fans are the most incredible people. They are so kind and so generous and so welcoming and hospitable to visiting fans. They obviously haven't been in the SEC long enough. That may change. But they're so incredible. And the game day atmosphere there, every school has a lot of pageantry, but theirs is like up a whole nother level because they are the largest military, you know, they have the largest corps of cadets outside the military academies. Mm-hmm. So there's all this pageantry and tradition around that in addition to around the football. So to me, it's my favorite place to see a game.
Did you attend the Navy Notre Dame game last year here at Everbank?
I did not.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. By the way, Donna just went to Fenway, but not for baseball.
She would have rocked this concert, I bet.
Who did you go see?
New Kids on the Block.
Oh, yeah.
Paula Abdul.
And Boys to Men.
I wanted New Kids on the Block to be my first concert. When I was a kid, like, that was going to be my very first concert. Really wanted to go. I think my aunt had even, like, signed on to take me. But it was in a little bit of, like, a sketchy area of Atlanta at the time. And my mom, like, put the kibosh on it. Yeah. So New Kids on the Block was not my first concert.
Let me tell you.
I still actually have never seen them live.
You can go now, and it's like you went.
Yeah.
In 1986. Nothing has changed except they have more songs. Yeah. But they do all the old songs. They wear the same outfits. They're a little bit bigger, so they're tailored to fit them. And they do the same exact dance routine.
I love it.
It's phenomenal.
Christy, yesterday you did something that's sports related, just a little bit different than the kind of sports we typically talk about. You went fishing.
I did.
Tell us about that. How did it go?
My dad's in town. He loves to fish. He brings his boat when he comes. I live up on Amelia Island, and so we go out, kind of do inshore fishing around the island, and went out yesterday, had a hard time finding bait. I mean, the day was not looking like it was really going to work out for us, but I just like being out on the water and being with my dad, so I didn't care. And we started catching a couple of sharks, and every time I go out fishing with him, we catch sharks. It's fine. I don't eat fish anyway, so I don't really care whether we catch something we can eat or not, because I'm not going to eat it. But then I got a redfish, and I've never caught a redfish before. I've been out fishing a lot, but haven't ever gotten one before. It's also my brother's favorite fish to catch, so he is not here right now. He is in Atlanta working, and I was able to snap a picture with my redfish and send it to him and gloat while he's working. So made the day all that much better.
Well, it's too bad that you don't eat fish because redfish are delicious. I know.
It was actually too big to keep. So Everybody's like, did you guys eat it? But it was actually too big to legally keep in Florida. So he had to go back.
My mom has done that twice now where she's caught redfish that are mm-hmm. too big to keep. And that does not stop her.
See, I'm a lawyer. I'm a rule follower.
Well, and I think it probably bothers my dad, who was an attorney, but she was like, you know what? All right, a fun question for you before we let you go. 81-year-old Gary Player did a backflip off of a boat recently. Speaking of boats, what do you hope to be able to do when you're 81 years old?
Well, I wish I could do it. I can't do a backflip at this age. So I'm pretty sure I'm not going to magically learn between now and then. You know, I mean, like, realistically, I want to still be able to hike. Chad and I love to hike. We're actually going to Colorado next month, and we'll hike a lot while we're there. I want to still be able to climb, like, those mountains and not have to be like, oh, no, I can't do that one anymore. Like, it doesn't have to be anything grand. I just want to enjoy the lifestyle we have now.
Understandable. Donna?
Because didn't I pose this question to you? Is that what?
Yes.
Yes. So I was like, oh, wait, what's my answer going to be? And I sat there and I'm like, 81. You know what? Honestly, I just hope to still be able to eat solid food. I want to have my real teeth.
Really ambitious.
So I would love to bite into an apple and not have my teeth fall out. So that's what I hope at 81, that I can eat some solid food.
That's a good one, sort of. Not exactly acrobatic fighting, stretch of the imagination, but...
I got high hopes.
My grandmother, when she was 80, still had a personal trainer. Unfortunately, she got cancer and then passed away. But had she never had cancer, I still believe she would be working out in a gym somewhere or still have a personal trainer. So that is definitely my goal, is to be someone who is still actively working out, riding a bike, walking on the beach, mm-hmm. pretty much if I want to go fishing, doing something like that to where I my body is still in good enough shape to be able to do all that. And yeah, I can't do a backflip now either. So keep Gary Player, keep on keeping on. Chrissy Dosh has joined us for the past hour. We are so thankful for that. You can find more information on Christy at ChristyDosh.com. Christy, you're the sports business analyst, an author, and a publicist, and a public speaker. And I'm sure I'm forgetting one, but you do a fantastic job, and we sincerely appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. More with Donna Murphy coming up next. We're going to get into a dose of Daily's Place, and we have a Peter Brook chocolate heel to give away. And Donna wants to bring up a story about the Denver Broncos, so we'll do that as well. You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes on 1010XL. Lauren Brooks here from Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. It's that time of the year, football season. And again, this season, Dreamfinders Homes is giving you a shot to win your dream home. That's right. If the Jaguars return a punt for a touchdown at Everbank Field, one lucky family will have the chance to win $100,000 towards a Dreamfinders home. I love seeing the smiling faces of the first family who won, and this year it can be you. Visit a Dreamfinders Homes model home today to register. Dreamfinders Homes, the official home builder of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars football by women for women and men. Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes,
presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products
on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Before I get to a dose of Daily's Place, I want everyone to hear what Tyler had to say about being a perfectionist. So, dear yes. Tyler.
Please.
Oh, it was
Were
awful.
You ever a perfectionist?
I was as a kid, and when I was in Little League, I would strike out, and I would get so frustrated, I would take my helmet, and I would throw it in the dugout, I'd throw my bat, and I would even get to the point where I'd be on in the verge of tears. And I'd be crying as a 6 or 7 year old at T-ball or a coach pitch, so that was me, the perfectionist, at 6 years old.
See, now, for me, I don't consider that a perfectionist. I consider that a sore loser. That is
very much so.
That is the extreme version of a sore loser.
Oh, my mom hated it. She grilled me every game.
Good.
I think it's only natural, though, for a young child, because typically, let's be honest, most kids are kind of used to getting what they want. And when we don't get what we want as youth, sometimes we throw tantrums or, right, we might get upset. So I think it's perfectly normal. I know the very first time I ever fouled out of a basketball game, I was playing in like a church summer league or something, I cried. And my parents were like, you don't need tears, just stop committing so many fouls. Oh, yeah, so there's that. I guess that's a smart way to do it.
I never cried at losing, and I lost a lot. I came in second a lot.
Yeah,
I was happy.
You at some point obviously learn how to lose because it is just a part of life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing about being a perfectionist that I know I've struggled with a lot is I don't want to attempt something if I think I'm going to be bad at it. Like, for instance, going to Topgolf, I don't want to even swing the club because I know I've only swung a club a few times in my life. I'm not interested in golf, in playing it. I'll watch it all day long, but I'm not interested in playing it. So why pick up the club and then even pretend to try, right, or actually try? And that's where the older I get, the more I need to stop and say, you know what, just do
it.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And you shouldn't care what other people think of you either.
Exactly.
Now, unless you hit someone with the golf club because you're really bad at it, that's maybe a bad thing.
Yeah, don't shoot any chili peppers.
Yeah.
Golf fans will know what that is.
When it comes to Daily's Place, 6 shows in the next 3 weeks, D-Murph.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And everyone I know that has been has absolutely raved about it. My mom actually gave me some really great feedback, and I gave that to our friends with the Jaguars to pass along and to continue to upgrade everything there. So the first show this Thursday night, Styx and REO Speedwagon, that'll be a blast. Then I know one that a ton of people are looking forward to, Journey, next Wednesday.
Journey?
Good question. I have no idea. I would think so, though.
I would think so, too.
Yeah, I would think both Baloo and Frangie would. Lady Antebellum, Thursday, July 27th. Obviously, all the country fans are going to come out for that one.
A lot of people have been clamoring for those tickets, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
A lot of people.
They are great in concert.
I've seen
them on a bunch of different award shows. Mm-hmm. And Hillary, I forget her last name, has a phenomenal voice, the lead singer. So that'll be a good one. And then the following week, a cappella group Straight No Chaser, 80s legends foreigner and family-friendly kids bop. And DMurph, as always, where do people go if they want to give the folks at Daily's Place an idea of who they would like to see?
At Daily's Place. That's all that's all it takes. Now, I have not inundated them with my please contact.
Or Michael Bublé.
We want Michael Bublé. But I am going to say, whenever he does come back on tour, if next year, Daily's Place would be right there on his list.
Because
he's come to Jacksonville many times.
Great.
Yeah. So, but that it's such an intimate setting, and that's what he loves. So.
And then the covered flex field is now entirely enclosed and the installation of the artificial turf has begun. That's great news since training camp is certainly right around the corner. And speaking of training camp, a few important dates. Rookies report on Wednesday, quarterbacks on Friday, and then all the veterans are in the building next Wednesday. And I will certainly be there along with a lot of the guys from the radio station Thursday, July 27th for the very first training camp practice that we can go to. And fans, if you want to go, just head to jaguars.com/training camp. Have you been to training camp before, DMurph?
Yes, but that was years ago.
It's hot.
Yes.
But it's a lot of fun. It's the first time you get to see football. I cannot wait. Me too. The one great thing about football is I love it so much. The one bad thing about football is it means work.
Right.
It means that the weekends of spent relaxing, enjoying, those are done for a little while, but it goes by so fast at the same time.
Marcel, the infamous Marcel Robinson of now Action News, and I have been going back and forth about, you know, football starting because he's like, oh, I'm starting to get busy now, the Jags, you know, everything's coming full steam ahead. And he mentioned the Patriots are going to finally feel like what it's like to lose when the Jaguars come up there. I go, him and I have been going back and forth with that one. It was fun.
I love that. Well, hopefully Tyler's going to get a song ready for you to try and win the Peter Brook Chocolate Heel. But while he's feverishly looking through our wide array of music, DMurph, tell me about this Broncos fans and ticket story.
Okay, so I found this on Nesson.com. And
your go-to.
My go-to, because they have a variety of stories from everywhere. Broncos' decision to revoke couple's season tickets will make you fume. So, of course, I had to click on that. I'm like,
that's a good headline.
That's interesting. Yes. So these ticket holders, they have been ticket holders since 2011, fell into a category over the last two seasons. Now, that category is what the Broncos are doing. It's a new team policy where Denver will try to reward fans who patiently await the chance to attend more home games at Mile High, and they will punish the ticket holders who don't. So they keep track of which season ticket holders are selling their tickets. Now, these fans, the Hayeses, they had a baby, a newborn child in 2015, and then they were pregnant again in 2016. So the past couple seasons, they sold their tickets on the NFL site, NFLticketExchange.com, because of those reasons. So they sold, I don't think they sold all, but they sold the majority of them. So they revoked their season tickets without even asking why. They just took them away and said, you're no longer a season ticket holder. And so they have sent multiple emails to the Broncos organization stating, look, this is why we had to do it. We are huge Bronco fans. My wife grew up in Colorado. We have ties here. I don't understand. And no one has gotten back to them. No one has raised any phone call to them, nothing.
Wow.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That's horrible as far as the public eye is concerned and
right.
as far as customer service goes. It's one thing to keep track of that and then especially be able to use that data to improve things and get in contact with the season ticket holders and say, how can we get you to attend more games? What do you need from us in order to make things better?
Right.
Because I love things like the I think it's the new, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta that's opening next month when Florida State and Alabama play. Everything there is going to be basically like $6 or less, all the food and drinks and things like that. So I love how certain stadiums are moving to things like that. And then that may be what some of the customers, if they actually were to get in touch with them for the Broncos, they may say, you know, we just can't afford the beverages or the food once
right.
we get to games. But to not even get in touch with them and revoke them, that almost seems like it's discriminating.
Right. And they said that according to, you know, Denver, they have a 75,000 member waiting list. to get on, which is so much like Green Bay.
Sure.
Green Bay is obscene. You could never get season tickets unless
the tickets.
Right, they will them to you. So I think it's absurd. He said he's gone on every social media site you can possibly just to get their attention of, hey, we want to go. These are the reasons why we couldn't go the past 2 years. So I found that exactly what the headline said. It would make you fume. I'm like, well, that's intriguing. And yeah, that's ridiculous.
Right.
So for shame by Denver.
They're trying to take care of their family in the best possible way. And yet they're still, it's impressive that they're able to keep the tickets with young kids and not say, you know what, we're just going to have to get on the waiting list after the kids grow up. So pretty good. All right, your chance to win a Peter Burke chocolate heel comes up now. Let's get a little Muzak going, and then first person to guess it, just text into the 1010
XL
text line driven by Duval Ford, 641-1010. First person to know that artist, you will win the Peter Burke chocolate heel.
It's a pretty big hint Donna knows who it is.
I know it. My hand is up.
It could be New Kids on the Block. She just saw
that. We did that one last week. And that was adorable.
Well,
it's a new dawn.
It is such a great song.
This is a great song. You got that right.
This person, artist, opened up his concert with this song, what, three albums ago? I've seen him three times. So
wow. Mm-hmm. I heard Brent Martineau got some tickets yesterday that I kind of covet, and I wasn't able to get them. It's for Jack Johnson down in St. Augustine. So I got to try
good
and work
them,
on that.
You know,
good for the Martineaus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First guess in the Duval Ford text line, Ed Sheeran.
Oh, that's a good guess.
Wrong. You
I mean, if that person watched Game of Thrones, then Ed Sheeran's on their mind, so I can understand that.
By the way, he deleted his Twitter account. He got so much criticism. I don't know what happened in the actual episode, but he deleted his Twitter account today because of all the criticism he got.
You know what I say? Good for him. Who cares about Twitter? Who cares about the social media?
Social media is great if it's used properly. That's what I always say. But obviously, if not, then things can go awry.
Right.
And that is why some people just refuse to have it at all, which I certainly understand. I cannot imagine working in sports without Twitter. I've never worked
that's
in
the first
the media
app
business.
You look at when you wake up, right?
No,
or was
I actually,
that Blythe?
1010XL is the first app
1010X.
That I put on when
right,
I wake
you
up.
Put it on.
Yeah. I wake up somewhere around 6:15, 6:30, and then I listen.
Maybe it was Blythe that said immediately.
That she looks at Twitter. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, the reason 1010XL, the app, is so great is because I can get a lot of sports information from guys like Tyler without ever having to look at anything. Mm-hmm. So I can still lay in bed with my eyes completely closed in the dark, which is fantastic. And I don't have to disturb the dog. And then I can still glean information from the guys in the morning. I'm telling you, it's a great system. It's sad but true. I don't even turn on the TV at all in the day. Like
that's
at
good.
Night, I'll turn on sports, but I don't watch ESPN. I just listen to 1010.
See, that's funny because with what Christy said, like her and Chad, besides like Saturday all day for college football, they really don't watch it. Unless it's Sox at night. Like I go home, I don't want to watch it. I just don't. I've had enough of it all day.
Yeah,
that's
well, because you are able to kind of watch throughout the day on the TV in your office,
right.
Which is nice.
And then I listen to us. So,
to us,
it's
all day.
Double whammy.
Or double dose of greatness.
Double dose of greatness. Yes, very well put.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to get into a little Ezekiel Elliott and things we like to do / things we don't like to do in the summer. That's all coming up next. You're listening to Helmets and Heels built by Dream Finders Homes on 1010XL.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Congratulations to our Peter Burke Chocolate Heel winner. Donna, do you want to tell them?
Michael Bublé.
Who it was? Of course it's Michael Bublé. If you want to win the Peter Burke Chocolate Heel next week, remember all you're going to have to do is guess who sings or the title of the song to the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford. Don't call. Just text. That's easier.
Easier.
Trust me. Tyler's having to listen to us, too. So just text in. and then you'll win.
Which is difficult enough for him.
Absolutely. Listening to us, I know, is hopefully what he gets paid for the most around here.
Yes.
At 10 XL. Welcome back to Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. Donna Murphy, Lauren Brooks alongside you, Blythe, will rejoin us next week. By the way, do you know what next week is?
No.
It's the start of training camp.
Okay.
It's also my birthday. We're going to do the show on my birthday.
Okay.
I get to work till 9 o'clock on my birthday. See how excited I am about that?
I have that on my staff information and I need to print out a happy birthday sign. So, yes. Today was Fat Tony's birthday.
Yes, it was. And I still need to text him. I saw it on Twitter.
34.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. I'm almost 34. A year older than him. Almost exactly. All right. Mm-hmm. Back to the good stuff. Ezekiel Elliott. The Cowboys are still looking into the incident that happened over the weekend. His involvement in an altercation at a bar is kind of the latest that's going around. The star running back at least was there. We're not exactly sure what happened. So certainly the team will continue to gather information. Here's one thing I found interesting. Ezekiel Elliott's father told an ESPN reporter, "My biggest worry is I don't believe my son knows how to navigate in life being a superstar. He's like a little boy who wants to play football and have fun and enjoy people. We've always said this about Ezekiel ever since he came into the world. He's just happy to be alive. He's a happy guy, but this world is not." I think that's a sentiment that a lot of parents would share mm-hmm. about their athlete, especially young man who's now making millions and millions of dollars.
And today I saw what Jerry Jones said about him speaking how, you know, he needs to learn how to deal with media and social media with the way it is today. And they're going to continue how to educate them on how to behave, on how to, it says as to how behavior, how it can be portrayed. So on how their behavior will be portrayed, you know, socially and publicly. This is now what, the third or fourth incident?
So at least the third.
It's the third. When we brought this up earlier, you and me, it was just all right, is this a pattern? Is he going to learn? He's so young in this league. And now this is only the first thing that has happened while he's been in the league, where the other two were prior to him being drafted and part of the Cowboys. So I feel bad for his father because I feel like, and that was last year when he spoke about it, correct? And he was afraid of it going into the league. And so he's done everything he should, you think. And we don't know what happened at the bar. Maybe he was defending himself. Who knows? We don't know what happened when he got in this bar fight. But I don't know. It's just a little, do I want to trust him? I mean, you also have your quarterback who's signing autographs, but not really signing autographs. You know, so those two, as you know, now going into their second year, are they a pair that's going to be doomed in getting into trouble or what?
And I don't think either of them have that really in their nature. I think the autograph thing is more laziness than doing something wrong.
And that's disappointing, is what it is.
Yeah, that one doesn't bother me so much. The sending your name over and over again is tedious. But the Ezekiel Elliott stuff, I think if you're in his life, parent, friend, kind of personal mentor, I think you just sit down and talk to him and say, look, the career of an NFL running back is very short. The last thing that you want to have happen is you get suspended and miss any part of that mm-hmm. career. You can postpone all of the social life stuff for a few years, or at least pick and choose where you're going to spend kind of your off-season nights. Don't go to a bar. Don't go to a club. Go to a friend's house where you kind of know who's going to be there. And I understand that that's asking a lot of someone, but if I was to phrase to most people, hey, you can make millions as long as you don't drink for the next 4 years, or you can make millions as long as you don't smoke pot for the next 4 years, I feel like every single person in their right mind, other than Justin Blackmon, who may not be in his right mind, would all sign up for that and say, I can abstain from said vice for 4 years if it means that I'm going to set up not just myself for my life, but my future family for life. So that's kind of the part that it gives me heartburn when we have these conversations about players who make some really dumb decisions, because it seems like they have everything set up for them to succeed. They have nutritionists and athletic trainers, and they can have all sorts of medical procedures done outside of, you know, massages and stem cell stuff and all that stuff to make them the best possible athlete. And yet some take advantage of it and some don't, and some end up in situations where they will get punished by the league or at least by their team.
And for the counterpoint to that, though, is it's all about his circle. It's all about who you are keeping by your side. Because if you take somebody like Gronk, who is always in the spotlight of doing something insane, but he's not getting into trouble. He's not doing anything illegal. He is having the time of his life, being single, making millions of dollars, and doing what he loves. That seems to be what Ezekiel Elliott wants to do. Single, make millions of dollars, do what he loves. Well, you just have to watch with who you hang out with, I think. That's all about the crowd. And you look at some of the former players or players who used to get into trouble, and it was all about, I have to leave my circle. I can't be by you. You know, I can't hang with you anymore. You are getting me into trouble. Now, I don't know how much NFL life is like in Ballers, but I watch Ballers. And if it's anything like that, then yes, it is so much about who is in your crowd.
Well, and you just have to be, I think, cognizant of the fact that you do have to make sacrifices in order to be the best possible athlete that you can be. And if you're not willing to do that, then at some point you're going to look up and regret, I think, a portion of it. And, you know, it's a fine line to walk. They're 21, 22, and they now have more money than potentially they've ever had in their life, depending on the background that they came from. And you're telling them not to go out and meet people and brandish, you know, the new car, right, and the jewelry and all that stuff. I understand that that's very challenging. But again, if it was me, I would just talk to them and say, look, you can do this the rest of your life all you want. Just give me a few years to where you are pickier and choosier about where you go, who you spend time with, and what you put in your body.
Now, we don't know what the truth is, but there are some people who have posted on Facebook and Twitter that they were at the scene, and they say that Ezekiel Elliott knocked out a man who was harassing a woman who was in the group that he was with. So how does that change the story and this set of events for you guys?
Well, for me, I would say don't put yourself in a situation where you may need to come across this, because you still can get arrested even if it's not something where you're causing the altercation. However, if he's really defending a woman, then good for him. It just still shouldn't happen at a bar.
Right. I agree. And it shouldn't. Who was that story I sent you today?
Terrence Williams,
also with the Cowboys. And he was in a bar. Oh, no. Supposedly racing barefoot. Yeah, racing barefoot in a strip club parking lot.
Club, yeah.
At so-called 5 a.m. And so he corrected the story, said, no, it was 3 a.m. And I told you, that's ridiculous. Is there a difference between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. in a strip club? There shouldn't be a difference.
I think the only difference is he was probably trying to say, A, report the details accurately if you're going to say things about me, and B, 5 a.m. is probably when the club gets out, and that's kind of like the, you know, the stragglers that are all exiting. He's saying like, hey, I left when it was still happening. It you know, I decided to leave at that point. That's what I think. But I mean, this is coming from someone who's obviously not a strip club goer, so I don't really know when they close.
Like, I don't, we're looking at Tyler like he has anything to say. But I just, why are you in a strip club till 3 a.m.? I know why you're in a strip club till 3 a.m. I'm not that naive, but seriously, that is putting you in a bad situation. Can you leave at 12? Is that a problem of leaving? Do you have a time that you have to be home and you turn into a pumpkin? Could you do that? I don't understand.
Tyler,
I don't get it.
You're a young male. Would it be hard for you to stop going out, so to speak, if you were a professional athlete?
No, and if I knew that where I was going each night could put me in a situation that would put my job at risk, with potential fights like Ezekiel Elliott, I know that there might be an environment I'm not comfortable in. I probably would want to avoid that. And if I want to go out to drink, just invite all your people over, because Ezekiel Elliott probably has the nicest house of any of his friends. So just throw a party at your house. I know it's tough to say and don't go out, but, you know, with camp so close, 10 days away for the Cowboys, I I don't know. I would have rethought that.
It's like the same thing when we hear that future draft picks, you know, get plucked with a drug test and they pop positive. And it's at the scouting combine. Like, what are you doing? Couldn't you have waited? You know the combine is like 2 days away. What happened? But this is something I would love for us once football season kicks around and we go back out on the road and we have whatever Jaguars guest we have with us. I would love to ask them that because this is us talking. We're not in this lifestyle. We're not out there. We're not making millions of dollars. We don't know what it's like. We can just assume this is what we would do. So I would like to ask the ones that are making that money, that are living that, do you understand why this person does what he does?
And they're going to say, sure, they understand it, but right. they would never do that.
Right. Well, of course.
Under Tom Coughlin's regime, there is no such thing as doing anything wrong or even coming close to being put into a situation where you do anything wrong. At least that's how I feel that they would answer the question. But yeah, you can absolutely ask them and then it'll be interesting to see the answers. And I think that's the fascinating part is getting to meet certain players and you kind of get a look into their personal lives. Mm-hmm. Some of them want nothing more to do than play video games and hang out. And then certainly you have ones that
Have families,
right? Mm-hmm. And they are not interested in that scene anymore. And I think Jacksonville is a perfect city for those first two. And then the ones that love the nightlife, certainly Jacksonville is not, I shouldn't say it's not the right scene, but it's not going to have the same kind of nightlife that some of the other bigger cities have.
No, it's not like Dallas, apparently. When Mike and I went to Dallas for the Super Bowl, that was our first one that I attended with him, we were told this is the main spot, unless you're going to Vegas, this is the spot you go to that has the best strip clubs. We're like, okay, that's so not why we're here, but thanks for the knowledge and good to know.
Sure, absolutely. All right, D-Murph, switching to our final subject of the evening. What is your favorite thing to do in the summer or things? And then the reverse, what's something that somebody else loves that you despise?
I will never go fishing. And I know you and Chrissy just talked about it. I got no patience for that.
So even if you're promised that you're going to catch fish, still no.
Okay. Plus, I don't eat fish.
Yeah.
So.
And so you're definitely not going to bait your own hook.
No, I don't. I got no interest at all in that
and
whatsoever.
I love it. All right. What's some of the things that you love?
Exactly. Being in water, whether it's a lake, whether it's the beach, the pool. As much as I hate fishing, I am a fish. So, like, I was swimming before I came here. So, being in the water for me. You?
Yeah, being in the water for sure. Scalloping is one of my favorite things to do. I don't think you can call that fishing.
No.
But that is something that I look forward to doing in the next few weeks before football season really gets started. Another thing that I immediately thought of, going to Jumbo Shrimp Games. I absolutely love, as you know, because you're the keeper of the tickets.
I am.
You
ask a lot.
I'm probably the biggest, requester of those tickets. Me and probably Jack O'Brien request those tickets all the time. I love being outside, and obviously I love sports, but that to me is almost even less the sports, and it's more just the getting to see people that, you know, you haven't seen in a while and getting to really just socialize outside.
And that is such a nice stadium, though.
It is.
It's got great ballpark food. Yeah.
Tyler, have you been to a Jumbo Shrimp game this year?
I did. I went to a Thirsty Thursday game, of course.
Attaboy. Yeah, that's what I'll be going to.
I want to go tomorrow for the, I don't know if they call it Bark in the Park or what their official name for it, but you can bring your dog tomorrow.
Oh, cute. Yeah, you should go to that. And then maybe the dog won't urinate on your bed.
Hopefully not. It'll be in the baseball yards.
Yeah, I heard that this morning. That was funny.
And then, I'll be going this Thursday. It's a good time to go. Mm-hmm. And then something that I hate, it's funny, Chad agreed with me, Chad Scott, who we referred to earlier, agreed with me. Disney, people love Disney.
Yeah. Sorry, hacker.
Not just do I not want to go in the summertime. I don't need to go anytime. And I appreciate that other people enjoy it. I'm never going to put down Disney. I understand that kids love it. Parents love it. People who are married, like Hacker and Heidi, absolutely love it. I am good with all that. It's just not something that I am interested in doing.
I don't disagree with you on that one. We were lucky enough that, you know, our little dude was born late September. So wherever we go, people are back in school. It doesn't matter. Like last year, we took him to Disney and it was a mess because he really doesn't care. It's more for girls. It is more for the little princesses. It's not for...
I hope Packers listen
sorry, but it's not. I mean, with parents it's coming with kids, girls. It is. That's what it's about. You can go there, you can get dressed up like a princess.
Sure.
The boys go there and it's like, well, let's go to Pirates of the Caribbean and that's it.
And there's the Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones?
Indiana Jones, thank you. I was thinking of two different things at once. There's Indiana Jones and then there's...
Universal
like
is more...
Star Wars?
Yeah, Universal is more for the boys. That's the superheroes. That's everything. That's what I am looking forward to taking him to. Spider-Man and Hulk and everything. You got everything going on there. But shoot, no. I do not want to touch those lines at all in the summertime.
And a lot of people love movies in the summertime. A lot of big blockbuster movies get released. How do you feel about that in the summer?
We just went and saw the new Planet of the Apes this weekend. Date night, phenomenal. And I'm going to look this up, and you'll have to come over here and look at it, because I got a little creeped out by watching it. I've watched all three, the new installments, and I love it. Have you watched any of them?
No.
You fall in love with the main ape, with Caesar. You just, the way that they draw him up, the makeup, whatever they virtually enhanced, it's amazing. And you love this kid. You love this ape. And you feel for him, his family, everything like that. But the latest one I saw, it had the perfect amount of humor, action, had everything you could want in a movie. It was phenomenal. But the thing that freaked me out was the little girl in there. She looked exactly like me when I was a little girl. So I was kind of freaked out watching this movie.
I will have to take a look for
sure. I'm going
to
try to find her. But I love going. I mean, we don't get to so much now unless, you know, we go down to my parents and ask for a date night. But I love going to Blockbusters. I can't wait for Thor to come out. You know, I always talk with Fat Tony when he's here, or Beef. I'm like, all right, give me the list. What's coming out? What do I need to see?
And I'm so not a movies person because you have to be inside to watch those. I mean, I guess they do.
Yeah,
have, like,
you don't like
Moonlight
being
movies,
inside.
No, not at all. Not in the summertime. I just don't want to, okay?
It's so great, though. This was so good.
Good night here, Donna Murphy. Thanks to Tyler Devitt for producing. Many thanks, of course, to our two special guests who joined us earlier in the show, Samantha Livingstone. She is an Olympic gold medalist in swimming. Her website, SamanthaLivingstone.com. She's also a professional public speaker, and you will love, if you have any sort of perfectionist in you, you will love to learn how to get rid of that, because it's not always a good thing. And also to Christy Dosh for joining us. Christy is not just Samantha's publicist, she also owns the firm Guide My Brand. She also is a public speaker and is a sports business analyst, and she did a great job. Her website is ChristyDosh.com. So we've had a ton of fun here tonight. We'll be back next week. And until then, everybody enjoy Hacker After Dark. That's coming up next right here until midnight on 1010XL.